This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Trump named the federal justices that overturned Roe, and then the governor DeSantis signed the law that is now at issue in Florida. So that's very much connected to Republicans who are already, you know, being put on the defensive on these issues. Whether that actually translates into the presidential race being more competitive, that might be a stretch. We'll see.
Election season is still a few months away, but the scent of it is already on the wind. There is a lot at stake in the presidential election, of course, but that's not the only issue for voters in November. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with Daniel Nishanian of Bolts Magazine to get a deeper understanding of the importance of the many down-ballot races on which Americans will be casting votes this fall. We examine state Supreme Court elections in Arizona and North Carolina and discuss how abortion may affect various swing state races in places like Florida. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Daniel Nishanian. He is the founder and editor of Bolts Magazine. Daniel, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
So when we first spoke, you were just launching Bolts. Before we dive into all the nuts and bolts of this upcoming election, tell us what the mission of the organization is and how it's been evolving since we last spoke a couple years ago.
So it's really great to be back after a few years of having Bolts in the world now. You know, Bolts, the idea behind Bolts is that for a lot of the big issues that people are interested in or care about, the federal government just is a very small slice of what's important, of what's happening. It's very important to be aware of the ways in which counties, municipalities, states are also very, very important when it comes to matters linked to civil rights, voting rights, and so on. And what Bolts does is on the themes we cover, which are really focused on criminal justice on one hand and voting rights on the other, we really pay attention to what's happening around the country at these levels, at the local level, at the municipal level, at the county level, at the state level. And we try to connect the dots for people because, you know, there's a lot of states, a lot of cities, a lot of towns around the country. And it's easy to miss the forest for the trees. And it's been great. You know, there's been a lot of interest in the past few years at what's happening with prosecutors, with judges, with sheriffs, with election officials, and the laws that are changing in blue states and red states that are sort of going in different ways. And it's been great to have this platform to cover all of these issues.
And when somebody watches cable news on election night, that's maybe the first time that they'll look at down ballot races for the year or for the cycle. I think it's really important to be a part of the democratic process 24/7, and that's what Bolts is designed to do.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it may seem esoteric or it's, you know, not as important as the presidential race. And really, it's not a matter here of arguing what's more or less important. But again, it's the idea that, like, for this, it's the same reasons people care about the presidential race, right? They should be caring also about the other thing, then there should be more attention. You know, just as one example that I'm sure we'll get more chance to talk about, when the Arizona Supreme Court just very recently upheld an abortion ban, these are offices that are on the ballot at the state level. Judges are elected, you know, and yet that is not part of what we think about when we think of elections. Like the question of how, you know, a lot of people care deeply about abortion and the U.S. Supreme Court, which obviously is extremely important and part of the presidential race debate, but also very important to think about how at the state level, how in each of your states, as you listen to the various state governments, the various state institutions are playing very important roles in shaping every day what is happening. And very often, if we're specifically talking about elections, these are elections that aren't even contested. Like very often, no one files to run for these offices. So very often, the person who occupies them and is playing such important roles is just the person who filed for office. I mean, literally, we're talking about
just dealing with the paperwork.
Right. I mean, you know, there's a lot of reasons why different offices are uncontested, which maybe go beyond this conversation. But if you look, it's just striking. Like, I cover a lot of DAs and prosecutors, which, again, are important for abortion, let alone other issues. And the majority of races, systematically, the majority are uncontested. So, you know, the conversation stops prior to even starting. Like, there isn't even a debate. There isn't even an opportunity for people to come in. But then there are a lot of races where there are opportunities, there are interesting things happening, and it's very important to pay attention to them.
I think the Arizona Supreme Court is a perfect jumping off point because A, Arizona is going to be one of the more critical swing states for the presidential election. It seems to be now ground zero for the abortion debate. And then there's also the issue of the Supreme Court there, which you mentioned. You wrote a piece earlier in April entitled Your State-by-State Guide to the 2024 Supreme Court Elections. And it goes across 33 states' high courts and dives into them. So Arizona's kind of ground zero of the abortion debate. And then their Supreme Court is obviously having a major impact on the national debate. And many of the members are up for election this fall. Why don't we start with your Supreme Court guide with Arizona, if you can.
That's a great question, in part because when a ruling like this comes down at the state level, people's minds don't often go to asking who are these people and are they elected? Because at the federal level, obviously, there are no elections for the U.S. Supreme Court, right? So maybe our mind, like, you know, obviously we understand that the presidential election matters, but our mind doesn't exactly immediately go to whether these people are elected. But at the state level, they often are. And Arizona has what's called a retention election, which some states do, some states don't, which means that an election for judge isn't an election between different candidates. It's just a yes or no election as to whether a judge should be allowed to stay on the court when their term ends. And, you know, very, very, very often a retention election doesn't get a lot of attention. It's very rare that a judge is controversial enough in a high-profile way enough for there to be some kind of organizing or movement around the retention election, because there's no actual opposition on the ballot. But that, you know, of all decisions, a decision that upholds an abortion ban on nearly all abortions, which is what the court just did in Arizona, is one that has gotten that kind of attention. And two of the judges on the court are up for retention this year. Both of them voted to uphold the abortion ban earlier in April. So that decision was 4-2. You know, you can do the math easily. So of the four justices who voted to uphold the ban, two are up for retention. So, you know, if in a world where they were replaced by people who want to strike down the abortion ban, that 4-2 would have been 2-4.
So in a retention election, when you say replaced,
right,
the voters don't really have a choice to replace candidate A with candidate B. It's just, do you like candidate A or not? So how does that play out usually?
Yeah, that's a great question. So you're right that that's where the retention is, which I think is a big reason why. I mean, it's one of the reasons why retention elections don't typically get a lot of organizing around it, because it's so indirect. In Arizona specifically, the governor right now is the Democrat who is trying to stop the abortion ban from going into effect. And if they were to be, the judges were to not be retained in November, that would create two openings on the court for that governor to fail. It gets complicated, Alex, because in Arizona, governors don't have full authority to choose whomever they want. So there's constraint on their choice. So it's not, again, quite as direct. But you can bet that at the very least, the governor would do what she can within the authority she has to take into account, in the same way as, you know, any Democrat or Republican governor thinks about those issues, to taking this issue into account. In fact, I will add, and maybe some people who are listening to this will remember that approximately 7-8 years ago, there was a Republican governor in Arizona controlling it was a Republican-run state government. And what did Republicans do? They were not happy with the court, so they expanded the court. They packed the court. They expanded the court from 5 to 7 members, I believe. And they made it a little easier for the governor to get what he wanted. And that shifted the court to the right. We hear a lot about whether the court should be extended at the federal level. Well, in Arizona, Republicans did it. They expanded the court, got conservatives in the court, and you know, and it led to where it led a few weeks ago. The conditions are there, at least for in Arizona, for there to be a very unusual amount of focus around the judge elections.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Daniel Nishanian from Bolts magazine. So, Daniel, as you mentioned that these parties know which way an elected or potentially elected judge may lean, the problem is that a lot of citizens don't really know much about these candidates. I mean, just when you see the turnout rates in off-election years in terms of the presidential cycle, that gives you an indication that there's fairly deep apathy amongst the electorate, which leads to a cycle of very high retention rates, one would imagine. Re-electing these judges tends to be a fait accompli of sorts, doesn't it?
In most cases, yes. It's what's very interesting about Supreme Court elections is that they're very important everywhere. You know, we're talking about the fate of abortion in a state can come down to it, and there are other states we could talk about where that's really come down to the state court. But it so depends on the state. Like in Wisconsin, it's like the state where Supreme Court election is as important as anything else in terms of the amount of money it gets and so on. But then in other states that even in swing states, like I'm thinking off the top of my head of Oregon and Georgia, where it's exceedingly rare to even have a contested election where people just, incumbents just run unopposed cycle after cycle, where the positions of the justices hasn't been discussed in the same way. There's a number of factors going into that, but depending on where you are, you might have a very different connection, understanding, awareness of your state court, and different types of conversations around it. So that's really interesting and very much a state-by-state debate or situation.
It reveals a lot about how there's just not a lot of information, data-driven information for voters on these very important issues of how we're going to proceed with our law enforcement.
Yeah, I mean, that's important to think about all the ways in which these judge elections, you know, matter greatly. I think that what makes it difficult is it's just very hard to find not just information about important rulings in many places, but also sort of a consistent analysis of how a certain judge might have ruled along the years. At the federal level, again, if the coalitions between the conservative justices and the liberal justices are well understood, you know, if we got a news alert now that a justice had decided to step aside or retire, we would all sort of immediately understand the implications of that decision, you know, who gets to appoint it. We would know how that might shape the federal court. But that's very hard to reproduce at the state level. And some of it for good reasons, say state law is very esoteric in some cases, but especially with the federal court system becoming quite conservative in recent years at the top level and down, a lot of people are trying to look at their state court systems to think about what other, because the state court system and the federal court system are quite divided. Like there is it's possible to get to file a lawsuit in state court and have it be won on state grounds without the federal court system like intervening, because it's not been decided on the basis of federal law and federal constitution. So a lot of progressives especially are trying to look at state courts and state constitutions and create different avenues of lawsuits that they could win on issues like death penalty, like abortion access, and so on. So that's been very interesting. And so there's really kind of also a new awareness of the fault lines around these courts that I think is borrowing a playbook from the right in some ways, like a very high profile example of a retention election becoming a thing in my lifetime, which is pretty rare, is in Iowa. Just to go back in time for a moment, there have been almost never a case of state Supreme Court justices facing controversial retention elections until the court decided to legalize gay marriage in the 2000s, I think 2006 or around that time. And then in the a few years later, conservatives managed to organize to oust a lot of the justices who had taken part in that decision, and that was very rare. And I think there was that playbook has existed, but it's quite difficult to find examples, I think, of that. And that playbook has also existed in California a long time ago against justices who had taken part in decisions that were perceived as too in favor of people who were in prison or incarcerated people. That's usually the playbook that's been used in these state elections. Quote unquote, a soft on crime judge who was perceived to be anti-death penalty in the 80s, who was not retained. It's rare, but those are the kind of things that have happened. And now we're seeing sort of a different way of approaching these elections, where something like an abortion ban is what's at issue, or decisions of that nature. Voting rights decisions sometimes are at issue. So it's a change. It's a change in who is trying to pay attention to these on what grounds.
So Daniel, you mentioned how voting rights are also affected by these Supreme Court elections. North Carolina is a perfect template for any concerned citizen to learn more about. Why don't you explain what's happened in the last couple of years in North Carolina and how this could be a wake-up call for a lot of those who want to continue having free and fair elections?
Well, what's interesting about the court in North Carolina is that it provides such a strong example of why these institutions matter, because it flipped in 2022, and there's sort of a contrast before the before and after that's pretty striking. So the court before 2022 was under a Democratic majority, and the court system had issued a number of decisions that was important on voting rights and racial justice, actually, and other issues that are adjacent. On voting rights, for instance, it had struck down gerrymandered maps that Republicans had proposed in North Carolina. That was a state-level decision. It didn't have to do with the federal constitution, didn't have to do with the U.S. Supreme Court. It was something that the state court was doing. And then in 2022, the court actually flipped to the right. They were such close elections in both 2020 and 2022 for the Supreme Court in North Carolina that produced the Republican majority after 2022. What one of the elections was won, the Chief Justice of North Carolina was a Democrat, lost by around 400 votes across the entire state. So it's really coming out of very thin margins. But the result was a Republican court after 2022. And the Republican court very quickly signaled it was not interested in the precedents that the prior court was setting. So it blessed the gerrymanders, the Republican gerrymanders that had gone through, which has significantly strengthened the hands of Republicans in the state and is going to basically lock in a Republican majority for the rest of the 2020s. In the state, it has also issued other decisions, like it reversed a lower court decision that had allowed a lot of people in North Carolina to vote because they were on probation and parole. They were outside of prison, but North Carolina does not allow them to vote. A court had given them the right to vote, and the state Supreme Court took that right back. So, you know, there's just a lot of examples in North Carolina of what difference it makes who controls these courts. The Democrats are in a bit of a hole now there. They're now down 5-2, and they're actually the only seat on the ballot there this year is a Democratic seat, a civil rights attorney who was named to the court by Governor Cooper there, who's a Democrat, is running for a full term. And so Democrats cannot take the court back in 2024. But it would be a huge, huge hole for them if they fell down a 6-1 hole, because they have a path to taking back the court over the next two cycles, I believe, if they keep the seat this year. And again, you know, like when you it's never too early to think about, like, the people who care about who has who controls power in these states are, I promise you, are thinking about this way in advance. So the maps in 2031, it seems like a long time away, but the whether or not they're going to be gerrymandered, you know, for the remainder of the 2030s, for the 10-year period that's starting in 6 years, that decision seems distant, but it's actually going to be it's actually on the line in 2024. It's in the line in 2026 in the state court elections. So it's interesting because in North Carolina there is some attention around it, and we will see how it evolves.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California, well, to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. I tell you, made for you and me. As I went walking.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio, and I'm speaking to Daniel Nishanian from Bolts. So, Daniel, circling back to abortion, it seems like the Republican Party, after 40 years of making this a social wedge issue, has gotten what it's wanted, technically. But now that genie is out of the bottle and they can't put it back in. When that Arizona ruling came out, you saw a lot of Republicans from Donald Trump to Carrie Lake all backpedaling, thinking, well, you can just go somewhere else for an abortion. But they're doing whatever they can to distract the public away from the abortion issue now. They want to focus on anything else, basically, besides abortion. Maybe give us a glimpse into some of the swing states and just your general take on how abortion is going to affect us in November of 2024, Daniel.
It's interesting to think about the fact that there's now, like, people like Trump and Carrie Lake, as you said, who are rolling back their own support for abortion bans. But, you know, in some ways, it's not just that the genie's out of the bottle. It's also that these things are locked in, because for a huge goal for conservatives for a long time was to put people in judges' seat who were very clearly anti-abortion and had been vetted as anti-abortion by the Federalist Society, by other places conservatives, other things that conservatives look at, because they wanted anti-abortion judges, because it was very important to them, because they had been burned by some appointment at the federal level. And, you know, so it's and those judges are now, have a very different analysis or attention of electoral dynamics. You know, they're typically more insulated from elections or public opinion. And, you know, the judges that have been installed at the federal level for life, you know, at the state level for 8 years, 6 years, 10 years, don't necessarily care that, like, the Republican Party's November outcomes depends on something, because they're ideologically very committed to the cause. That was the whole point of the movement for 20, 30 years. So that's what we're seeing in Arizona, right? That's what we're seeing in Arizona right now, where the 1864 law has come back because of the state Supreme Court. One thing that's going to be very important around the country this fall is there going to be a lot of referendums on the ballot on abortion rights, right? So Arizona and Florida are two states with abortion bans and restrictions going into effect that are going to have referendums. The Florida ban is actually going to be extremely interesting and important to follow, because it has a threshold of 60% to meet, which is even if abortion rights have passed almost systematically when they've been on the ballot, 60% is a high threshold. So the Florida is going to be a tough campaign for referendum organizers, but a very important one. Obviously, it's a humongous state, right, with a lot of people whose rights are going to be at stake.
And a state that's also kind of started to lean more consistently red. Do you think it could be back in play for Joe Biden?
The question of whether abortion rights can make a difference at the presidential race is tough. I think we have seen a lot of examples of voters being very willing to split their votes between referendums and presidential races in a ways that I think if you're like very, if you maybe are a listener of this interview, it might be a little odd because it's like the presidential race is so marked by like, you know, like how can people on the same day vote to increase the minimum wage and vote for Republican for president? But that's, you know, we see that over and over again. It's definitely going to, I mean, you know, the dots connect. Like in Florida, Trump named the federal justices that overturned Roe, and then the governor DeSantis signed the law that is now at issue in Florida. So the dots very much connect to Republicans who are already, you know, being put on the defensive on these issues. Whether that actually translates into the presidential race being more competitive, that might be a stretch. We'll see.
But also, it's just as much of a question of turnout, really. Like, will abortion create more interest than just a normal presidential election? Will it get people to the voting booths?
Yeah, I think we in 2022, in the midterms, we definitely saw that, right? Where, you know, it's hard to, you know, attribute things to one cause, but Democrats were expected to do a lot worse in the 2022 elections, and a big reason they didn't was what was the importance of abortion, who we drove to the polls, and the importance of the issue of reproductive rights that a lot of people cared obviously a lot about. So, and that's, there's going to be similar debates, conversations in 2024. And also there's going to be a lot of evidence that a lot of the candidates like Carrie Lake, who are now trying to take a compromise or trying to present a position that they present as a compromise position, are actually have a lot of things on the record on video as saying very, very, very different things just a few years ago. And that is going to be in ads, you know, in the fall. And that's going to also play a role in these campaigns. I mean, no matter how red or blue a state seems to be, right, like a razor thin election can make such huge differences. It's sort of crazy to think in 2018, when Ron DeSantis won for the first time, he won by 0.4%, right? So it's, you know, even if a state has leaned red since then, it's such a tight state. And the amount of policies, laws that the Republicans have passed due to that tiny, tiny, tiny win in a way that has also made it easier for them to win next time, right? One of the laws they passed is to make it more difficult for people with felony convictions to vote, to roll back a constitutional amendment that voters passed. Like, there's so many things Republicans have done just on the basis of that 0.4 victory that it's important to remember that like the smallest election win can actually produce huge contrasts and differences.
Well, and Florida was ground zero for that example in 2002 with Bush v. Gore.
Mm-hmm.
So I highly recommend our listeners check out Bolts Magazine. Daniel Nishanian, I hope we can have you back in the fall to pull back some more of the curtains of our democratic process. Daniel, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Antti Balas, The OJs, and Sharon Jones and the Dab Kings. To read a transcript of this show, go to seachangeradio.com. Stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast on our site or visit our archives to hear from Doris Kearns Goodwin, Gavin Newsom, Stuart Brand, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.